Welcome to Shattering This, the program devoted to the fastest growing and now largest segment of society. To those who know that all of the world's religious, political, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours is 877-300-7645. It is Friday, and therefore it's my pleasure to welcome one of my favorite people the world over, and one of the most enlightened, one of the most courageous, one of the most compassionate individuals I've ever known. His name is IQ Al-Rasuli. He is the author of a three-volume set called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. You can buy it at Amazon.com. IQ, a lot of things are happening in the world, and sometimes the things that are happening don't immediately scream Islam is the problem. I know that this morning you wanted to talk a little bit about the Obaminator and his recent move to open up full diplomatic relations with Cuba.
Yes, I would like that.
Go ahead.
Well, the way I look at it is, it isn't an act of compassion or friendship.
No.
He's doing it to open the floodgates for immigrants from Cuba to fill up the southern United States, like he opened the corridors from California with Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
The intention of Obama is to reduce the number of European Americans in numbers of the United States population, I'm talking about, and increasing the numbers from blacks, Muslims, and Latin Americans.
Yes.
I don't even think about it. I know it's true. Mm-hmm. I know this is his diplomacy. His diplomacy is the destruction of the United States of America as an exceptional country. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. The United States is no longer an exceptional country, so he is simply adding nails to the coffin. I think he's doing it for one other reason, and that is because everything else in the world is upside down. America is so upside down that his party's lack of performance in the last elections, his absolute failure in his war against the Islamic State, the statements he's made regarding the Islamic State, he has proven to be so incompetent that he needs the distraction, and talking about opening diplomatic relations with Cuba provides a distraction.
True. I agree. It is a distraction. But he's also providing another distraction vis-a-vis Russia. And this one is not going to be a funny one.
No, in fact, I spent a good part of the program yesterday talking about the consequence of Russia. And the Russian problem now is, I think, has the two issues associated with it. I'd like to talk to you about both of them because you get a pretty good view of the world from the perspective of Europe and understanding the forces that are at play. The two things that have crippled Russia here recently, the primary issue is oil and oil prices, because they have an oil-based economy and they've made huge investments in the distribution of oil and gas, and their oil and gas is very expensive to extract and to distribute because of where it is located. And so when the price of oil goes down, that's the first economy to feel the effects of it. And the second is the misguided sanctions put on by the Obaminator. Yesterday, I spoke of why I thought the oil prices in the world were falling. And I have no evidence for this other than just my perspective on the world. And I want you to feel free to criticize this if you think I'm wrong. I think that when the United States IQ invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran, it so disrupted the balance of power between Sunni and Shia Islam that the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar sought to remedy the problem initially by creating the al-Nusra and the Islamic State to fight a proxy war against the Iranian control of Syria. But they created a monster, a snake, that had two heads, and they couldn't control it, and it started to sap at them. And so that plan blew up in their face. So the Saudi Arabians, the Kuwaitis, and the Qataris, who have very low extraction cost and distribution costs of their oil and essentially run private estates, could still add to their wealth with extremely low oil prices. And for the first time, none of them decreased production to raise the OPEC price. And I think they did it as a way to affect Iran.
It's an economic war against Iran.
Right. Yeah. And the casualty of that war turned out not to be Iran, but Russia.
Yeah, but it's not going to be only Russia.
Correct.
Just because the oil price went down, the instability causing in Russia is going to spill all over.
Correct.
I have absolutely no doubt about it.
Correct. One of the things that's going to happen is that it's going to put Russia ever closer to Iran, which means it's going to put Iran ever closer to a nuclear bomb.
Definitely. No question.
Russia is one of the top 10 economies in the world. They are among the largest trading partners of the European Union. You can't have a major recession in Russia without having a corresponding major recession in Europe.
Definitely. No question.
And you can't have
simple mathematics.
Right.
Sorry, simple arithmetic. Yeah. Not even mathematics.
Yes. And you cannot have a major recession in Europe without having a major recession in the United States.
And in China, because they will not be buying anything.
That is correct. And what happens when economies fail and countries feel like this has been imposed on them by a combination of American malfeasance, American aggression and arrogance, and by the OPEC actions to wage war against Iran?
If I'm not mistaken, World War II was started because the United States at the time imposed extreme sanctions against the Japanese for invading China.
Yes.
And the Japanese had absolutely no choice but to have resources. So they invaded East Asia.
Yes. Yep. That is correct. World War I, from an American point of view, was started because J.P. Morgan was loaning money to Great Britain, which was about ready to fall to Germany, so they staged the sinking of the Lusitania to draw America into that war to save England and to save J.P. Morgan.
Yep.
Economics is what drives wars.
Correct. Definitely. It's always economics. It's not... Right. To contain territories or to own territory is to own resources, obviously. This is economics. It's always economics.
Yep. Yeah, and if you look at the fighting of the Cold War, you know, Reagan came up with the idea that if he grossly outspent the Russians and hugely increased America's military spending, that he would bankrupt the USSR and that he would win the Cold War. But unfortunately, by increasing military spending, he didn't just bankrupt the USSR. He also bankrupt America.
Yes.
And so both countries lost. And now Obama is trying to replay a different version of the economic Cold War with Russia. Both countries are going to lose again.
Yeah. Everybody's going to lose, in fact. I mean, literally, everybody's going to lose.
Yes.
This is not funny. When a nation like Russia, a gigantic, 300-plus million people,
right,
when it collapses economically,
right,
the reverberations are not going to be local.
Right.
It will be literally universal. There's no question about it in my mind. And I can't understand why the Europeans and the Americans are thinking that Russia will just implode and nothing will happen.
Oh, yeah. They're convinced that Russia will resolve this issue by regime change and that Putin will lose his authority and that will be good for Russia. They haven't even bothered to think, who would they get in Russia that would be better than Putin? And they never think that far in advance, and they never think through what the consequences of destroying the Russian economy. And it's interesting here that while there is a psychological impact on people trading out of rubles, devaluing the ruble because of the sanctions, the sanctions don't have a substantial material impact. The impact is actually a direct result of the American invasion of Iraq, the empowerment of Shia Islam, and now the Saudi Arabians, Kuwaitis, and Qataris collectively waging economic war against Iran. That is the principal actor in this case.
Well, just like when the Obama removed the leader of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, and then had the leader of Libya murdered.
Yes. For what?
He created ISIS. Literally created single-handed.
Right.
He created ISIS.
Yeah, when we decided Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, he was a bad guy. He happened to be the best dictator in the Islamic world and America's most supportive ally in the Islamic world. But nonetheless, we decided he was a bad guy, so he had to go. And what we ended up with is a government that is run entirely by the mullahs in Tehran. We went from bad to worse. You know, you look at what happened with, as you say, removing Hosni. We went from bad to as bad as bad could possibly be with the Muslim Brotherhood, and this current government is as draconian, as uncivilized as probably any government in the world. There probably is no more harsh dictator in the world right now than the military junta in Egypt, and we're responsible.
Yeah.
It makes Mubarak look like he was a freedom fighter.
But Mubarak was a freedom fighter.
By comparison,
as they made him up, he wasn't.
Of course, right.
The Christians,
and then you look at
the other sects of Muslims were protected at least under the law.
The cops lived; they could survive. They had their churches, they had their lives, they had their homes. Yes. Now they've got nothing.
Yes.
And then you look at the syphilitic in Libya. Yeah, I understand. There was a period of time where Muammar Gaddafi was part and parcel to the upsurgence of Islamic terrorism. And it's because Islamic terrorism was funded almost entirely by OPEC. And he was a player on the fringes of Islamic terrorism because of his involvement with OPEC. But, you know, in the last 15 years of his life, he has been nothing but a man focused entirely on his own personal indulgences. Taking him out was stupid, and look what we ended up with. I mean, in Libya, there is nothing in Libya right now but marauding bands of jihadists.
That's
a hellhole.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. IQ, there are so many disastrous things that have happened in the world. I'm glad that you began with Obama's distraction with Cuba, because I think it is to cover up the absolute mess that this man has created between Libya. As you look at Libya, Libya is the central gun supplier now for Islamic jihadists around the world.
They started it even before they killed the ambassador.
Yes.
The minute Gaddafi was gone,
right,
Libya became dysfunctional. That's it, instantly.
Same
with Saddam Hussein. The minute he was gone, Iraq became dysfunctional.
Right.
Because Arabs and Muslims can only be ruled by terror. They cannot be ruled by democracy. They don't understand. They want to. There is not, even in the Arabic language, they use the Greek word Demokratia to describe democracy, because the concept never existed in Islam or in the Arab world. Never.
Correct. Well, when the Quran says you must submit and obey, when the Quran says that there is no choice for a Muslim because Allah has chosen their religion, and in Islam, religion and politics are inseparable. And the Hadith say that when Allah has provided you with your military leader and with your king and with your imam, you are to do what they say. Even the Quran must say 100 times that you must follow, obey Allah's and Muhammad's orders. There's no free will in Islam. There's, you know, democracy requires two things that Islam does not have. One is an open sharing of information. People have to be informed. People are indoctrinated in the Islamic world. There is no credible education, and there's no free press. So that prerequisite for democracy is gone from the Islamic world. And number two, you have to have free will. You have to have the concept of freedom. There is no concept of freedom, no concept of free will in a religion where the very name of the religion means to submit.
I need your advice because
sure.
I'm really shocked that even after the Holocaust in Europe, mm-hmm. the European Union, the European
yes.
leaders keep yes. hammering at Israel that she should right. make peace with Palestinians.
Right.
Okay. Which Palestinians? Hamas, the charter says, destroy them.
Right.
The PLO, the charter says, destroy them. So
correct.
With whom should Israel talk? I need your advice.
Yeah, and I would ask you this question, too. Dealing with fundamentalist Muslims, the PLO and Hamas, are they aware of the ninth surah of the Quran?
The Muslims are aware, but the
yes,
Jesus
okay.
are not aware.
All right. And they're aware of the hadith that that explains the ninth surah of the Quran as well. Both the PLO and Hamas leaders are fully aware of the hadith pertaining to the ninth surah and the ninth surah of the Quran itself.
Correct.
All right. And could you share with our listeners the story of what happened to Muhammad when he initially came down with about 1,000 militants, jihadists, heavily armed, to attack the unarmed community of well, he actually came initially to attack Mecca, and then he got cold feet. He ended up attacking Kabar on the way back because his jihadists craved the spoils of war that they thought they were going to get by conquering Mecca. But Muhammad got cold feet, and he signed an agreement with the Meccans so that to get some breathing room because he was afraid that he was going to lose in his terrorist raid of Mecca. Now, there was a treaty signed. What's that treaty called?
Hudaybiyah.
Okay. And in that treaty,
yeah,
and what did Muhammad pledge in that treaty?
10 years of safety.
And why did the Meccans want a pledge from Muhammad for 10 years that he wouldn't terrorize them, he wouldn't rob them, he wouldn't kill them, he wouldn't enslave them, he wouldn't kidnap them? Because those were the things that were specific to the treaty. Why did they want that?
To do it to them. He was doing
yeah.
it to everybody else.
Yeah. Correct. Now, and Muhammad's first terrorist raid was actually against the Meccans and Badr. So Muhammad actually signed his little X on this agreement and even renounced in this agreement that he was the messenger of Allah. So he renounced that he was the messenger of Allah in the agreement and signed the agreement. That's how frightened he was of this civilian community, this unarmed civilian community. For 10 years. What happened the following year?
Well, a year and a bit later, he started, he invaded Mecca.
Yeah.
He broke the treaty.
Right. And does the ninth surah of the Quran provide justification for Muhammad reneging on his promise?
Every verse in there.
All right. We're going to
justify his invasion.
We'll return to that and tie that to the stupidity of the European Union and the United States when we return. Welcome back to Shattering This. In the context of something that IQ mentioned, which was, what in the world is wrong with the Europeans trying to compel Israel to negotiate peace with the PLO and Hamas? And what we're doing is trying to expose that there is evidence that tells us that negotiating and forming a treaty or an agreement with a Muslim is counterproductive, and that this is not our opinion, that's not an interpretation, it is the fact. So, IQ, Muhammad signed this agreement that for 10 years he would not terrorize the Meccans. And the following year he comes down with 10 times the number of jihadists and promptly terrorizes the place, conquers it. And Muhammad always seemed to have his God provide him with an excuse, no matter how depraved his behavior was. Now, here he lied on a signed oath, on a treaty. And does the ninth surah of the Quran therefore state that any agreement any treaty between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim?
Yes, of course, but that's not the only one. It's repeated also in the Hadith and repeated in two or three other places in the Quran. Nothing is binding between a Muslim and non-Muslim. Nothing.
Right. By the way, doesn't the Quran also say that Allah lied and that Muhammad lied? That both there are statements in the Quran that have both of them reneging on their vows.
In fact, there are statements in the Quran to say that Allah is the one of the best deceivers.
Yeah, I know. It is amazing. You know, Allah was modeled after Satan, and the reason Allah was modeled after Satan is Muhammad was demon possessed, and the God in the Quran is in fact Muhammad, and he even announces that he is among the best deceivers. You'd think that people reading it would say, oh, well, why would you want a God that's a deceiver? Why would you trust the revelation of a God that is a deceiver? When a God who claims to be the best deceiver tells you that if you go off and kill for him, that you'll get virgins in paradise, why would you believe them?
Because people who are believing these things, and there are 1.5 billion of them,
right,
have no concept of logic. They have no
logic.
That's
correct. That's
I know
correct.
It sounds like an outrageous statement.
Yeah, it's true, but it's
but
true.
But if you can show me a fundamentalist Muslim with right. 2 brain cells of logic regarding yep. Islam, I would pay $100,000.
Yeah, and it's even true amongst the scholars who lie on behalf of Islam. They don't have any capacity for reason or logic. They're completely devoid of the concept of being reasonable or rational.
By the way, just to add fuel to the fire, in 1993, when the unlamented Yasser Arafat mm-hmm. signed the Oslo Agreement, many right. Arabs and Muslims said to him, you are a traitor. How right. could you sign a peace treaty? He right. said to them, you are stupid. Remember yeah. Hudaybiyah?
Yeah.
He
exactly.
reminded them, to remember Hudaybiyah, what does it mean? I sign anything with a kuffar.
Right.
But when the time comes for me to destroy them, forget about the treaty. Right. It doesn't mean anything.
Right. Because the Quran actually ties this together by saying that you should lie in wait for the unsuspecting, and that the purpose of lying is to make your prey an easier target. So the Quran pulls it all together, that lying and deceiving, as well as reneging on your sworn oath, are all designed to put Muslims in a position to more effectively kill and pummel and rob and rape non-Muslims.
Muhammad said, deceit is a stratagem of war. I
yes.
didn't say that. He said that.
Right. He also said, I'd be made victorious with terror. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, recognizing that the PLO and Hamas are principally religious organizations, they're Islamic organizations, is there any chance, and you've already cited the ugly one, Arafat, and by the way, he made that speech, not statement, not privately, but publicly, over and over and over again. Now, so would it be reasonable to conclude that Hamas and the PLO would rely on the Ninth Surah and Muhammad's example in signing a peace treaty with Israel, which was designed to put them in a position where Israelis would become easier prey?
Yes, of course. But by the way, I forgot to tell you, Sadat mm-hmm. also said it. Believe it
yes.
or not, Sadat also said it
right, right.
to the Congress, to his parliament. Remember Hudaybiyah?
Right.
He told him
right.
exactly the same thing.
Right.
Yeah,
and by the way,
literally had a fatwa from
yeah.
the Azhar University
yeah.
justifying why he could sign peace treaty with Israel.
Right.
They
right.
told him, you can renege on it any time.
Right. Right. And and if you look at their history now, like in the Palestinian Authority Accords that were created by Willie Clinton in Oslo, the Muslims took everything that was a concession to them as if it was chiseled in stone, and everything that they promised in return for those concessions, no longer indoctrinating their children to hate Jews, no longer sponsoring terrorism, that the recognition of Israel's right to exist, everything that they promised that they were going to do, they completely ignored.
Of course it was.
Did the opposite.
Yes, because they're not bound to it.
So,
for example, had they broken a single rule that they agreed upon, and Israel immediately put a stop to it,
right,
they would not have continued. But it's
correct.
Israel's fault and the West's
correct.
Fault that
I
when
agree.
The Muslims break a treaty,
I agree.
They let them get away with it.
Yes, for example, Hamas was fired a bunch of rockets about a year and a half ago into Israel. And Israel responded by attacking all of the rocket sites, and because the rocket launcher sites were near schools and hospitals and the like. Lots I can't even call them Palestinians because there's no such thing as a Palestinian, but lots of Muslim women and children were killed when Israel took out the rocket launchers, which was Hamas's intent. They wanted to sacrifice them for their religious objectives. And there was a treaty that brought an end to that conflict, that Hamas was losing badly. Hamas started it, and they were losing badly. And the requirement on Hamas was to never again fire a rocket into Israel. 6 months ago, what did Hamas do?
Same thing.
Yeah, fired rockets into Israel. Right.
Yes.
And Israel responded, took out the rocket launchers. They were in schools and hospitals and apartment buildings, and so lots of Muslim children and women were killed, which was Hamas's absolute intent in putting them there. And when Hamas broke their treaty with Israel, what did the world do?
Support Hamas.
Right. They actually gave Hamas $6.5 billion as a reward for attacking Israel. And welching on their vows. So based upon the history of Muslims with Israel and their treaties and negotiations, based upon the history of Muhammad's example and in his treaty with the Meccans and then breaking it, what is the likelihood that there will be any benefit whatsoever to Israel or to the world for the striving for peace if Israel is compelled to negotiate with the Muslims that surround them?
First of all, it's a zero advantage.
Zero.
And second of all, I don't honestly believe any government in Israel will surrender its livelihood, its survival, to the hands of somebody else. I don't believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it actually is going to happen, IQ, but it's not going to happen for a while yet. And that I think Israel will eventually be so isolated by the world.
You mean more than now?
even more than now. I mean, you know that the European courts just announced that Hamas was not a terrorist organization.
And
they're the poster child for terrorist organizations. If Hamas isn't a terrorist organization, there is no terrorist organization in the world. I think it's going to continue to do what Kerry has imposed. You know, Kerry said, you either capitulate and give up the West Bank, or we're going to be part of turning the rest of the world completely against you. You will be a pariah. You'll be completely isolated. And very difficult for Israel to exist when the United States sells hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons to its enemies, particularly when isolates Israel, making it more vulnerable. So I think what happens is, and I think it'll happen around 2025, 2026, 2027, in that range. So not that far from now, 12 years or so from now, I think Israel's going to be put into a position where it ultimately is compelled to capitulate the West Bank. And you remember what happened with Neville Chamberlain when he surrendered the high ground of Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler to achieve peace in our time?
Yeah, a few months later there was war. That's
right.
All.
Right. What do you think is going to happen this time when the United States compels Israel to surrender the West Bank and Israel becomes about 10 miles wide where 70% of its population lives?
I think there would be war.
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean cataclysmic war. I'm not talking about conventional war.
Yeah, cataclysmic war. Yeah, it's a fait accompli. There is no there, that is the world's future. But this time, for those listening to us in Europe and the United States that would say, "Ah, but that's their problem. I don't want to be involved in their problem." What's going to happen when hundreds of millions of Muslims attack Israel and Israel tries to defend itself? Do you think that Russia and the United States and Europe and China will be drawn in, or do you think they're just going to sit by and just watch the Jews and the Muslims beat each other up?
Well, first of all, there will be nuclear weapons.
Yes, there will.
And it doesn't matter whether they chip in, the Europeans, the Americans, or anybody else. It will affect the whole Northern Hemisphere.
Correct.
We're not talking about two Nagasaki ones. We are talking about thermonuclear weapons.
Correct. And they're... If you read human nature and you look at the alliances between Russia and Iran, Russia and Syria, you look at the alliances between the United States and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Jordan and Europeans' relations with Turkey et al. And the United States' support of the Egyptian and Pakistani militaries, there's a 0% possibility that the whole world won't engage in that war. Back to Chattering Mr. in a conversation with IQ Al Rasuli. IQ, I have a question for you. The Boston Muslims mutilated some 200 people, killed three. The Islamic community and the media press and politicians immediately disassociated the Boston bombers from Islam, which, by their own admission, was the only reason that they perpetrated the attack. When the Sydney Chocolate Cafe shooter held the hostages and killed two people, the Prime Minister of Australia and the media, as well as Muslims there, quickly disassociated the shooter, the Islamic cleric, from Islam. When Boko Haram kidnapped now hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds and probably up to 1,000 girls to have them be sex slaves, burned down village after village, killed thousands of people. You have the likes of the Muslim guy, a Islamic scholar here in the United States, disassociate Boko Haram from Islam. And yet all Boko Haram wants to do is establish an Islamic state that's compliant with Sharia law. The Islamic State begins to impose its caliphate and impose Sharia law, and the President of the United States says that you can be certain that the Islamic State is not Islamic. Why are we constantly trying to disassociate Islam from Islam?
Simply, I wouldn't call it stupidity. They're not stupid. These leaders of ours are criminals. They are not stupid.
Yeah.
It is impossible. It is impossible to have all of them being ignorant of what the message of Islam is. That's an impossibility. What?
I would say in the media, ignorance. I think in the media, I think ignorance is possible. But in politics, even if ignorance were possible, it's not acceptable. It's not an excuse. You know, if you are ignorant of a law in Europe and you commit a criminal offense for a law that you did not exist, does ignorance work as an excuse?
No, you're liable. Ignorance of the law is not a solution to any problem.
Right.
Ignorance of the law is not a solution. You are convicted.
So in Islam, since it is the principal force in the world today, perpetrating terrorism, decapitations, kidnapping, the slave trade, mass murder, since Islam is the primary source for those things today, overwhelming, almost has a monopoly on those things, when you are aiding and abetting a criminal enterprise like Islam, aren't you an accessory?
They are accessories. Our leaders are accessories. There's no question about it. This is why, God willing, they should be held responsible, put on trial, and executed if they are
Yes. Well, there's no chance that they wouldn't be convicted because you have them with statement after statement apologizing and promoting. I mean, not just apologizing on behalf of Islam, not just running interference for Islam, but actually promoting the religion.
They are. All of them. In Europe,
all of them.
In America, all of them.
Right. So they're aiding and abetting a criminal enterprise and aiding and abetting our enemies. It's treason, and it's and they're an accomplice to murder.
But I'll tell you something. Something heartening is happening. Tens of thousands of Germans, middle class, not Nazis, not fascists, not right-wing, middle class, are demonstrating. Same thing in Italy. Same thing in France. You know, this is only the beginning. And I hope it will be accelerating extremely fast. Because
and, of course, the leadership in Russia is doing the same thing. And there's one other country, Kenya, that just came out with a number of legislative agendas that were designed to thwart the criminal enterprise that is Islam. So there is little places here, there, and elsewhere where either individuals or a country is trying to stand up.
But at least it's a beginning. Until a year ago, nobody was doing anything. But tens of thousands of people who are middle-class people demonstrating, believe me, it will catch like a house on fire. It will.
I hope you're right.
That anybody should allow Islam to take root anywhere outside Dar al-Islam. As you said, we quarantine them. They can kill themselves in their own country. They can do what the hell they like in their own country. In our country, we don't want them.
With their weapons, not with our weapons. I don't even want them killing themselves with our weapons. Let them kill themselves with their weapons. Let them fund their own mad and depraved schemes with their own money, not with our money. We shouldn't be fueling Islamic terrorism, and that's what we're doing.
I'll talk to you next week.
IQ, it's always a, always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you, IQ.
You take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.